Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the home of the U. Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Welcome to Hurricanes Weekly, where we talk all things Canes every Sunday morning. Today's show is presented by Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC. Miami's premier luxury dealership is Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC. Visit WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Now, the voice of the U, Joe Zagacki.
A very pleasant good morning, everybody, and welcome to Hurricanes Weekly. On this Sunday morning, May the 20th, 2018, we'll be with you for the next hour talking Hurricane sports. This past weekend, the University of Miami extended their winning streak to 10 games in a row as they took two games against Boston College. Yesterday's game, the final home game of the year, final home game in the career of Jim Morris after 25 years, was rained out in the bottom of the third inning. The Hurricanes were trailing 4-3 with the tying run on at second base in the third inning when the rains came, and eventually the game was rained out. So the University of Miami now on to the ACC baseball tournament. Most likely will have to win the tournament in order to get to the NCAA tournament. Earlier this week, we talked Hurricanes football. We talked about the upcoming season and this past year with Chris Felica, formerly of the University of Miami, and now working for ESPN as one of the producers of Game Day. Joining us now, the University of Miami Sports Information Department has had some legends go through it. We've had Carl Schmidt. We've had Larry Wall. We've had Rich Dalrymple. We've had Tom Piero, Spanky. We've had Kenny Lee. And right at the top of the list is Chris Felica, the Bear, who worked at the University of Miami, I think I'm going to say early 90s. All the years start running together for me, and now works with ESPN on Game Day and with Kirk Herbstreit and the entire Game Day crew. Bear, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing well, and yes, you hit the nail right on the head. I graduated in 94, so I was there from 90 to 94, and you mentioned a couple of very influential colleagues of mine, Larry Wall, Kenny Lee, Tom Piero, Linda Denton, John Hahn, Kim Stone. They were all there in that era, and it was a great time to be there. Never saw them lose a game at the Orange Bowl when I was there, right in the midst of that great 58-game home winning streak.
Well, I think I only did, when I was doing the color the first time around, I don't think I ever did a losing locker room at the Orange Bowl, so that was pretty good. Actually, let me go through this with you for a second. So Larry Wall is now in charge of media for the Orange Bowl. John Hahn had a tremendous career with the Tigers and the Red Wings. Dalrymple went on to the Dallas Cowboys. Carl Schmidt went on to the Kentucky Derby. Tom Piero had been very successful in business. Kenny Lee works with the Marlins and the Panthers. Linda Venzin, living in the Keys now, did a great job at the University of Miami. Bob Burda came in after you. He's damn near running the Big 12. That is a Hall of Fame office.
And Kim with the Heat as well.
Kim Stone, who was at my wedding. Kim runs the American Airlines Arena.
That's a pretty star. I think we need a separate University of Miami Sports Hall of Fame just for that. Let's get John Ruth on that. We can get a special wing for all of us.
That's why I tell Gorby all the time, look at the shoes you're stepping into, Gorby.
he's a great guy.
You've had a tremendous career with ESPN. Let's start with this. The Supreme Court yesterday or this week announced there's going to be gambling on sports in stadiums. How do you think this is going to affect college athletics?
Well, I think nothing is going to be going on that really isn't going on already. And people need to get their heads out of the sand. And this has been going on in the offshore world and the illegal bookmaking and industry forever. What this is going to do now is just bring it on the up and up. It's going to create revenue for the states, revenue for the government, and help people out financially, be able to get rid of a little bit of the stigma. I mean, people like to have a little action on some games. And look, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to. But if you want to put a couple of bucks on a game to maybe help you enjoy it a little bit more, maybe try and win a little money, now Now there's nothing going on in the dark that nobody's aware about. The thing that cracks me up about this is people, we're worried about games being fixed. And the fact that this is going to be regulated now and people are going to be aware of it, this is what causes these things to come out of the dark. I mean, all of the Arizona State scandal, BC, all of those things that went on in the past about potential gambling scandals, they all came to light because of Las Vegas and people noticing unusual betting patterns. So, I mean, this is just going to help people regulate it, and I think it's going to decrease the chances that any shady business is going to go on.
Some say it's going to give certain professional teams an advantage. Do you think in any way it will give a college team an advantage?
I don't necessarily. I mean, well, I shouldn't say that. I would think if you are a school that is a state school and funded by the state government, I think if your state government is going to be taking in a little bit more revenue now because of a potential tax increase on collecting a little bit of a little piece of the pie on some of this legal sports wagering on a state-by-state basis, I think maybe some of your say Florida were to be one of the states that enacted it, maybe Florida State or maybe Florida or one of the other state-run universities might get a little bit more in their budget. That's a very interesting angle that I hadn't really thought of.
All right, let's jump into the other good stuff, though. Football, University of Miami football. What were your thoughts on the noise that they made last year during the season?
Well, it was a very, very pleasant surprise last year. I think people for a while have been thinking the Canes were on a verge of a breakthrough, and I think if you would have, it's really weird. At the end of the year, I think the way the season ended, people were disappointed. But I think if you go back to the beginning of the year and you would tell people before the year, you're going to win 10 games, you're going to play for the ACC title, you're going to play in a New Year's Six bowl game, you're going to beat Florida State, you're going to beat Virginia Tech, you're going to beat Notre Dame, I think people would have taken that in a heartbeat. But because the way the season ended, you get in a position to potentially play for the ACC title, you lose your three best playmakers on offense by the end of the year, really a shell of your former self on offense, and the disappointment at Pitt, and the disappointment of losing at Hard Rock Stadium to Wisconsin in the Orange Bowl, disappointed of how the Clemson game went down. It kind of left a little bit of a bad taste in the fans' mouth, a little bit of disappointment. But I think if you're a Miami coach or a Miami player, I think that experience might make them better this year. You got a taste, you experienced some success, you experienced some excitement, and you were disappointed. Now you're in a position where you know you can get back there, and maybe you're better equipped to handle it now the second time around.
You know, to your point, there have been plenty of years in the past where Miami had won a game. Regardless who the coach was, they'd win a game, beat Texas A&M on a Thursday night, or beat Oklahoma or Ohio State, and here comes this avalanche of, are the Canes back? Are the Canes back? Joe, are the Canes back? And it'd always be like, oh, God. I don't think so. But this year, this past year, I felt this is as close to being back as they've ever been because of the environment they created, because of the style of play that we saw, because of the coaching staff, because of the recruiting. And as you said, I do think that they did run out of weapons at the end of the year. I will put that in one box and say, you know, they ran out of weapons really to match up with Clemson and Wisconsin. Pittsburgh game, that was to me an area where, you know, you just look at that one and say, that's not about weapons. That's not about talent. That's about will and desire. That one, guys, we let that one come in too flat.
Yeah, and I think that game a little bit too was the cumulative result of the previous couple of weeks, coming off of the Notre Dame game, coming off of the Virginia Tech game, seeing yourself in the top five or six of the college football playoff standings and realizing you're that close. And oh, by the way, Pitt was a team that, if you go back over the last few years, they have pulled some pretty significant upsets over very highly ranked. I mean, should they beat the national champion Clemson a couple of years ago? They've yep. done well against some teams. They beat Penn State a couple of years ago as well. So they got up for a lot of games. So that was disappointing as well. And you're right about the invite. That was the one thing from last year that really struck me. I've been to a couple of games at Hard Rock Stadium, and we all talk about the Orange Bowl and how much we miss it and how it was the greatest home field in college football history. But the night of that Notre Dame game and the night of that Virginia Tech game, the environment in that building was unbelievable. I was shocked at how loud the place was, how I mean, talk about, oh, Miami, fair weather, sell out. The game day crowd on the University of Miami campus was unbelievable. That was our best show of the year in terms of turnout, scenery, everything. We love going to places that we haven't broadcast from in a long time. And I would think everybody involved with the football program or whatever, just kind of pop that Notre Dame weekend on a recruiting reel and say, here you go, come on down.
Chris Felica of ESPN is our guest. Well, game day is your baby. You mentioned game day on the campus of the University of Miami. It could not have worked out any better. The weather was beautiful. But that show in general, when you reflect back on game day on campus at Miami, for you being alum and then watching your baby, game day, being there, what was it like for you?
It was really cool. It really brought back a lot of memories from my time being a student there, and looking at so many of the buildings are brand new compared to when I was there 25 years ago. Yeah, but being able to in our office there by the University Center and looking out, oh yeah, there's Mahoney Pearson where I live. Now there are the towers right behind, and seeing that what's been done with the Hecht and the facility going up now, it just brought back a lot of really good memories and just remembering that, hey, I'm here now, but the reason I'm here with game day now is because of the experiences I had here in Miami and the contacts I made and the opportunities that I had. Hey, just seeing a bunch of old classmates and a bunch of old coworkers, it was just a really, really a great experience, and I'm very, very hopeful that we can duplicate that again on October 6th.
I was going to say, now we got a chance maybe to have a game day back here, right? October 6th would be Florida. Would that be Florida State?
That would be Florida State. Yeah. Absolutely. And I wouldn't think it would depend on how, but all, I mean, as long as Florida State doesn't start off poorly. But if you look at the Canes schedule there, there's I think it would be a shock if they were anything worse than 4-1 entering that Florida State game with a really good chance of being 5-0. I mean, if you look at the ESPN College Football Power Index, Miami has better than a 54% chance in every game this year. According to the percentages and the win probability, the toughest game they have on the schedule is that game at Virginia Tech right now in late November. And I just love the way the schedule shapes out for Miami. The ACC, I'm sure that, I mean, they weren't looking to give anybody favors, but the way that it spat out the schedule, you've got the opener against LSU on the neutral site, and LSU is a team that offensively they're going to be very challenged. You saw there the number of players they had drafted last month in the NFL draft, quarterback problems, not a great offense. Miami could very easily win that game. They'll be a small favorite in the game. Yeah. Then you have four very, very winnable games, Florida State. Then you've got another four or five games at Virginia Tech. So they don't have that run of brutal games in a row like they did late last year with Virginia Tech and Notre Dame. So the way the schedule shapes out for Miami is very, very good in being able to keep those kids, get them up, and then if they have a little bit of a letdown, schedule lets up a little bit where they'll be able to get up three times for those three big games.
LSU kind of reminds me of Miami a little bit, a revolving door. They're having a tough time keeping their players there. Now, they just picked up, I believe, Joe Burrow's from the transfer quarterback from Ohio State, so that might boost their offense a little bit because I don't think they're really settled on that quarterback position, and this would be a way too early preview prediction. But as it stands now, I like Miami's chances in Dallas.
Yeah, I do as well. I think if you look at not only the quarterback position, we're losing Etling, and I'm not sure Burrow. I know he had been connected to LSU. I also saw he's taking a trip to North Carolina as well. I don't know if that's still on or off, but there've been a couple of different schools associated with Burrow. But I mean, look, you're looking at a guy that wasn't going to win a job at Ohio State, so he's just getting out. I don't think he's a difference maker whatsoever, but you're looking at LSU, uncertain on offense. You lose DJ Chark, one of your best wide receivers. You lose some offensive linemen. You lose your quarterback. You lose Darius Geis, who was your bell cow running back. They have a ton of questions on offense. And you've got a trio of Miami linebackers coming back. You got Joe Jackson, Rousseau, who turned heads during the spring. Points are really going to be at a premium in this game, and I think LSU is going to have a very difficult time scoring points in that opener.
Do you have a way too early top 10?
Well, it's funny because I haven't gone through the entire top 10 yet. I would think Miami would probably be somewhere in that 10 to 12 range, maybe to start the year. And I were just doing it off the top of my head, just because of, I mean, look, as much as I think Miami has the potential to win every game on their schedule, the Canes still do have some issues at quarterback. They need to figure out if Rozier is indeed the guy, or if Kosi Perry or Jared Williams are ready to take some snaps as well. And look, you have to replace Christopher Herndon. I mean, they got a couple of guys who they think they can do that, but it's just hard to go into the college football season this year and not imagine either Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, or Clemson, one of those four teams, winning the national championship, because they've recruited so well lately. Alabama, five of the last nine, five of the last 10. Ohio State's gotten to the playoff a couple of times. Clemson has been to the playoff three straight years. Georgia came within seconds last year of winning. It's just hard to, I mean, there are certainly teams that could make the playoff. Could Washington make the playoff? Sure. Could Miami make the playoff? Sure. Could Wisconsin make the playoff? Could Michigan say? Sure. But I just have a hard time thinking one of those four logical contenders ultimately won't be the team that wins it all.
Now, it's funny. I think Clemson, I want to say this, I probably have this number off a little bit, but the last 5 years, they have finished higher than their preseason ranking, which says something, because a couple years ago, their preseason ranking was number two when they finished number one.
And that's the great thing about what if you want to set off Dabo Swinney and get him on a tangent, on a roll about something, just bring up that Clemsoning term, how that Clemson always used to underachieve in the past. They would pull a big, they'd get a big win, and then they'd be the team that, oh, we beat Florida State, and then the next week you lose to North Carolina State or Georgia Tech. The fact that Clemson now is playing to their talent level each week. I mean, look, Dabo Swinney was not like the guy who was supposed to take over when Tommy Bowden got fired, but he's taken over. He's done a great job, and he is certainly one of the top five coaches in the game right now. Because year in, year out, they have now become what Miami used to be in the early '90s, what Florida State was for the longest time in the ACC. That's now Clemson, and they. If you look at the last, 5 years, I think it is now. I mean, only Alabama, I believe, has got a better record in that span than Clemson. And for the Tigers to get back to a fourth straight college football playoff, certainly nobody would be surprised. I mean, they didn't. It's funny. I was joking with everybody during the draft. But, hey, Clemson's run of having a player drafted in the first round is going to end this year. But that's bad news for the rest of college football, because all those great defensive linemen were back, and Travis Etienne and all those skill players that have an offensive back as well.
Yeah, they were one of the more physical teams we saw, one of the more physical teams we've seen the last couple of years. They've done a number on Miami. We've seen them enough, and I suppose if Miami wants to get to where they're going to go, they're going to have to get through Clemson one more time. Before we let you go, game day this year, any significant changes? What's your vision for game day this year?
I think it's going to be more of the same. No staff changes that I'm aware of, Chris. Myself, I'm so used to saying Chris Lee and Kirk, but it's now Reese Lee and Kirk, along with Desmond, David, Maria, Gene and Tom. The band will be back together, and week one, there'll be a couple of different options. I mean, looking at week one right now, there are a bunch of – it's a shame that the Miami-LSU game is Sunday night, because that would have been a great way to start the year for a show. But we got got Alabama, Louisville, and Orlando. You've got Michigan, Notre Dame in South Bend. You have Auburn, Washington, which is a huge intersectional game. In Atlanta. So there's certainly a few potential spots where we're open up. Haven't made the decision yet, but I guess if I had my druthers, I would say Michigan Notre Dame would be my personal front runner, just because of the offseason storylines, two of the great programs of all time, an on-campus game, which should have a great atmosphere. I mean, everyone knows the offseason storylines with Michigan and Shea Patterson coming in there. Jim Harbaugh is a lightning rod. I mean, same thing with Notre Dame, love, hate. Brian Kelly, another lightning rod type head coach, and that'll be the type of game where a team's seasonal direction will be determined by the winner of that game. And I just love being, yes, some of these great non-conference games are off campus at a neutral site game, but something about being on campus in a great environment for the first week in the college football season, it really, really whets my appetite.
And kind of a desperate game for both guys. Now, Notre Dame won their bowl game, but two teams, two coaches going to have something to prove this year. Chris, we are very proud of you. We're proud of your success at ESPN, and thanks for joining us here on the show.
Absolutely. Anytime, Joe.
Thanks very much to Chris Felica. When we come back, we'll hear from University of Miami Athletic Director Blake James as we continue on Hurricanes Weekly right here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com. This is Hurricanes Weekly, presented by Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC on the home of the U, Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Happy to welcome you back to Hurricanes Weekly on the Sunday morning, May the 20th, 2018. Thanks so much for joining us. Our show brought to you in part by Williamson Cadillac, Miami's premier luxury dealership, is Williamson Cadillac. This past week, we had a chance to talk with the University of Miami Athletic Director about the upcoming football season, plus the legacy of Jim Morris and other topics, as Blake James joins us right now on Hurricanes Weekly. Entering the final homestand for head coach Jim Morris, what do you think? You know, you look at his career, I think it's pretty hard to put his legacy into words, but can you sum up some of the things that he's accomplished at the University of Miami?
I think it's, you know, one word stands out to me is just incredible. I mean, what Jim's done over his 25 years is special. You look at, you know, 13 trips to Omaha, two national championships, just everything that he's done, from graduating his young men in his program to how they represent us, to obviously the way they execute on the field is just been special. And it's been an incredible run, and obviously one that we're hoping just keeps ending here with a lot of victories.
Yep. Coach Morris being honored during the Boston College Series, and I think that's going to be pretty emotional for him.
I would think so. You know, again, I think it's, you know, one where this is has really meant, you know, meant a lot to him, and I know he's as he said to me, you know, he's ready to be done and spend time with you know, his son Will and Nan, his wife. But you know, anytime you're going to walk away from something that you've put so much of your life in, I'm sure it'll be very emotional for him.
You know, I've had an interesting time with Coach Morris because in baseball, especially during the tournament, you could be in a situation where you play a game in the tournament and you lose. You had to come right back and play 20 minutes later. Or you in the super regional, your back is to the wall. And I think I always enjoyed those occasions as much as anything because his competitive spirit has always been so good. And I swear that every time Miami was in one of those positions, I always felt like they're going to win this game.
Yeah, I think the great thing about it is Jim always kept everything in perspective. And, you know, honestly, I'll say I see that from, you know, Jim Larinaga as well. And actually, you know, Coach Rick, you know, and Katie. And that's, you know, one of the things that I think you recognize what a special coach, you know, Coach Morris is regardless of the situation, he's calm, cool, and ready to go. And I think that the team feeds off that. And I think that's why you've seen over the years so many success stories out of this program.
This is Coach Morris's time, but when it's all done, we might have be in a pretty good run here. Team's playing pretty well, but it's going to be an easy handoff with the baton from Coach Morris to Gino Demari.
No, without a doubt. And obviously, Gino's been a part of so many years of greatness there with our baseball program, and has earned the opportunity to carry on the legacy as head coach, the next head coach at the University of Miami. And you know, I'm excited to support Gino and everything that he's going to bring as a head coach. He's brought so many great things as an assistant over the years, supporting Jim, and excited to have him as a head coach.
Canes are playing pretty good. ACC baseball tournament is next week, and somebody might not want to play the University of Miami if they keep playing this well.
I you know, when you look at it, Joe, I mean, you look at where we're at in the ACC. You look at, you know, if you see North Carolina, Florida State, Clemson, I think three of the top teams in the league, and of those games, we, you know, took two from Clemson, you know, one on the road from Florida State, and beat Carolina. And so, you know, we've beaten them all, And that's the thing. I think, you know, our guys will go into the tournament with the understanding that we can beat anyone on any given day. And I wouldn't be surprised to see us, you know, in a great spot up there. We're playing, you know, great baseball. We're getting better as the year goes on. Obviously, we've got a lot of young guys that, you know, have adjusted as the years come along. And I'm excited to see them go out and, you know, give it their best shot there in Durham.
It's this week we're ACC spring meetings in Jacksonville or outside of Jacksonville. Was there something in particular on the agenda? What are some of the big hot buttons for the ACC in the spring?
There's a lot of different conversations. You know, one of the big things that we have as a conference is the men's basketball tournament. So there's been conversation about where does it make sense to send the men's basketball tournament next. So you know, we're going to go to Charlotte in 19, and we'll be in Greensboro in 20, and then we're looking at 20 and 22, and what makes the most sense there. I think I would say, you know, without getting into any specifics, I think there's consensus, you know, in the room that, you know, having a presence in New York is great. You know, getting the tournament out is, you know, in other locations is a plus, but at the same time, respecting the history and tradition of the conference and having a presence in North Carolina, which we'll have for the next 2 years, is something I think across the board is where the room is at. And so, you know, those are conversations we have. Transfers is something that's out there right now that as an association we're trying to figure out, and obviously as a conference that's something that we need to have conversation on and see where we're at. And then also looking at the recommendations from the Rice Commission on men's college basketball and what that means for us and how do we best position college basketball going forward. And so a lot of conversations on what are things that we need to do. I wouldn't say there's unfortunately, no great nuggets I can give you, Joe, in terms of here's something hot that's coming down the line.
I like Washington and Brooklyn if it matters.
You know what? I would think those are two great spots as well.
You know, you mentioned college basketball, and the big issue is the one and done. How does that what happens there? Does the NBA have to act first? College basketball have to act first? Everybody's good on one and done, or do we look at a model that we have in college baseball?
Well, I think, you know, what came out of the Rice Commission is that the one and done, as it's set up right now, has to change. You know, they believe, and I'm in agreement with, that if there's a young man who's ready to be drafted out of high school and doesn't want to go to college, we shouldn't be forcing him to go to college to play basketball. We should have that. He should have that opportunity to go directly to the NBA. And I think that's something that we'll continue to push the NBA and the NBA Players Association on, because that's the collective bargain situation, as I understand it. But that's something that we'll continue to push both the NBA and the Players Association on needing to happen, because I do think that's probably best. And I don't feel if someone doesn't want to go to college or isn't right for college, because college isn't right for everyone, that they should be forced to come and attend classes and be a part of something that they really have no interest in doing. And so that's something that we'll look to fix through, you know, conversations with, you know, as I said before, the NBA and the Players Association.
Well, one of the big issues this week, the Supreme Court got involved here, and so they're going to legalize sports betting. When you talk with your fellow athletic directors, either in conference or around the country, is there any thought on how this could or will affect college athletics?
Well, I think we have to just continue to protect the integrity of the game. Beyond that, I think we're not going to be naive. I think there's a lot of people who are betting on college sports long before this past Monday, whether it was Miami Hurricane games or whatever game it was. The reality is Las Vegas has big sports books. I know there's gambling down in the Bahamas, and I'm sure there's other means that people that want to get bets in Miami were able to do it, and in all honesty, around the country were able to do it. And so it's something that's been out there. I don't think it'll change the game for us significantly, and we'll deal with whatever it is.
How is our Carroll Soffer indoor practice facility coming along?
They tell me we're going to be right on time, and we'll look forward to opening up for fall camp.
Well, it looks beautiful. It looks big. It's bigger than I thought. It's a pretty big, it's a big project, and it looks like it's going to be a pretty big building as well.
No, it is. It's amazing how big it is. And, you know, we're excited about it. And obviously it's something we needed as a program, not only the indoor facility, but the whole football complex that'll go in there. It's an investment in our football program that we needed to make. And, I get so appreciative of the Soper family, you know, Jeff, in making the gift in honor of his mother, and just Carol's passion for our program to see us be the best. And, it's going to be a great addition.
All right. Well, you're going to be stuck with me for a couple of days this week, but we're going to raise a lot of money.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks so much to Hurricanes Athletic Director Blake James for joining us. Let me talk to you for a moment about Miami's premier luxury dealership, Williamson Cadillac. Williamson Cadillac is the recipient of the 2017 Cadillac Dealer of the Year Award and the number one volume Cadillac dealer in the U.S. 2 months in a row. Experience their wide selection of certified pre-owned Cadillacs, all with a 6-year or 100,000-mile limited warranty, and certified to the highest standard with a 172-point inspection. A certified pre-owned Cadillac from Williamson Cadillac is giving you the best of both worlds: unmatched luxury and a unique automotive buying experience. Plus, peace of mind and confidence come standard. I've been talking about Williamson Cadillac now for the last 2 years and proud to do so. Williamson Cadillac is conveniently located at US 1 and 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto Expressway. Williamson Cadillac, for over 50 years, treating you like family, has made Williamson number one. Visit Williamson Cadillac today or WilliamsonCadillac.com for full warranty details. Williamson is Miami.
Radio.com. This is Hurricanes Weekly, presented by Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC on the home of the U, Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Welcome back to Hurricanes Weekly, Sunday, May the 20th, 2018. Our show brought to you in part by Williamson Cadillac, the recipient of the 2017 Cadillac Dealer of the Year Award and the number one volume Cadillac dealer in the U.S. 2 months in a row. Hurricanes baseball team rained out yesterday against Boston College. The game did get underway, got to the bottom of the third inning before the rains came. Did have a very nice pregame celebration honoring University of Miami head coach Jim Morris. The Canes will take a 10-game winning streak into the ACC tournament, which gets underway on Tuesday in Durham, North Carolina. Most likely, the Hurricanes will have to win it all to get to the NCAA tournament, at the very least, get to the championship game. And the tournament gets underway in Durham on Tuesday. We'll have coverage for you on AM 790. Well, it's never too early to talk college football. Joe Rose and Zach Krantz did that, getting the never too early top 10 and thoughts on the University of Miami upcoming football season with Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports.
Remember, all guests appear on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved 2 blocks south of their old location. Get there now. And joining us right now on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline from CBS Sports, Dennis Dodd. And we were staring at your article, Dennis. You know how we love...
Way to tease us, Dennis.
We love us some football
you got
down
us.
There.
You got us, Dennis. I hope you're happy. You know how we feel about our college football. Good job by you.
I appreciate it. Got to do something in the offseason.
Yeah. Hey, listen, a post-spring top 25. I was actually a little surprised you had Miami at number 9. Dennis, what do you see that's got you excited about the Canes?
Well, 10-win season, a lot of talent back. I think the line, I've been told the line, that's a Mario Cristobal, as a matter of fact. About his old Canes. He loves the linebackers. He thinks they're going to be really good. And look, they got a shot in that division once again. So I'm in person against Notre Dame, which is probably the high point of the season. And more of Malik Rozier. I really like him.
Well, yeah, Malik Rozier is topic of conversation down here because we've had Mark Richt on a couple times, and obviously we talk about the younger quarterbacks, the freshmen that are on campus, and Malik's obviously got the advantage because he's been in the system. He is, like you said in your article, quarterback Malik Rozier is a year older and wiser, and there will be some buzz if the Canes do beat LSU in the opener, but Malik Rozier, I think, is going to end up winning the battle because of the fact he's been in the system for a long time, and that'll give them the best shot to win next year, even after the last three games last year when he kind of struggled and he was kind of ripped down here. But Malik probably will be the quarterback for this team, correct?
Yeah. I mean, you know, experience is the best thing. You know his ceiling. You know his floor by now. I don't think this is – with this team, I don't think this is a team you want to turn over to a youngster just yet. I might be completely wrong. But as long as he doesn't turn it over, you know exactly what you're going to get out of the guy. And that just might be a division championship.
Let me ask you about some other teams here in the state of Florida. It's always good for business. We can talk about Miami, Florida, and Florida State. You like Florida and Florida State making a little bit of a comeback this year?
Yeah, I think the Dan Mullen effect of Florida is going to be significant. Whoever gets that job at quarterback at Florida is going to be influenced by what he's done. We know his magic touch with quarterbacks. And at Florida State, again, DeAndre Francois might not win the job, but I think that last year was just a blip on the radar, the 7-6 season. That would have been a top-10 team and maybe a 9- or 10-win team with DeAndre Francois. Now, Flaxman ends up getting the job. They'll have to flush that one out. And Francois has had a bumpy road in the offseason. We know that. But, you know, I like Dan Mullen, I guess, in his first year better than I do Willie Taggart. That's not to cast aspersions at Willie Taggart, but that just seems such a natural fit, Dan Mullen, at Florida.
All right, so you got LSU at 25, by the way, also, and Miami will face them in the opener. What do you like about LSU? How do we get pre-prepared for that game right now?
I like LSU because Ed Orgeron lasted the season. You remember, I was there 2 days after they lost to Troy, and it was like a state funeral in that place in Baton Rouge. You literally didn't know if he was going to make it out of the week. There are a lot of people calling for his head. And he not only made it out, he kept his head down. They grinded out 9 wins in that division, which I thought was pretty significant. And they're going to be better. You know, there's questions at secondary. There's questions about Darius Geis. But doesn't LSU always seem to come up with a defense and a running back? The eternal question with them just seems to be a difference-making quarterback, and they think they've got one with those two guys down there.
Well, I want to ask you about the Big Ten because I did notice, boy, you've got them loaded. Ohio State at 4, Michigan State at 5, Wisconsin at 6, and Penn State at 7, Michigan down the road a little bit. It is kind of weird to think that Michigan, if I'm looking at what you have out there, could finish – fourth in their own side in the east part of the Big Ten.
Could finish fourth and win 10 games. Wow. That's how good the Big Ten East is.
Wow.
The best division in football this year. It's absolutely loaded. Sorry, SEC West. You know about Ohio State. They'll be favored to win the Big Ten and be in the playoff again. Michigan State, depending on who you talk to lately, has anywhere from 18 to 20 starters back, including a sneaky good Brian Lewerke, who threw for 400 yards twice last year at Michigan State. Penn State looks like it's going to win 11 or just keeps grinding out 11 win seasons under James Franklin. This guy is a heck of a coach and a recruiter all of a sudden. Michigan is the fourth best team in that division.
Wow.
But with the addition of Shea Patterson coming off an 8-5 season and a few weapons there, we know the defense is good. They're going to be good. You know, that division is either going to beat each other up and the Big Ten's not going to make the playoff again, or, you know, it's going to be iron sharpens iron. It's going to be really good.
Dennis, did you think Harbaugh would be dominating the Big Ten by now, or did you think it was going to take a while?
I thought he would be right there winning a Big Ten title right now. Dominating, I don't know. You know, given his history, he lasted no more than 4 years at any place he's been. This is his fourth year. He's done really well in those 4 years. Well, he hasn't done really well yet. He, as I mentioned, last year was 8-5, his worst record at Michigan. He still hasn't produced a difference-making quarterback, which, forget about the Big Ten, you need anywhere. You need it in Conference USA. In the Shea Patterson decision, I think, was one of the most significant in college football in the offseason, because now he's got a gunslinger. He can go downfield with the ball. Simple as that. So, yeah, even though he's had two 10-win seasons, they weren't the right 10 wins, because we know now he's 1-5 against his two biggest rivals, Ohio State and Michigan State. And no, there's been some grumbling, and it comes down to this, guys. You know, for Michigan, they hate Ohio State more than they'll ever love Jim Harbaugh, so he's got to start beating the Buckeyes.
Have you got any nasty emails from FAU alum that they're not in that top 25, Lane Kiffin emails?
Not FAU, more UCF. I guess they thought it was their birthright after a 13-0 season.
But, well, they are the reigning national champions, if you ask them.
It was a little bit of a bad look. Okay, national champions and, you know, a slappy top 25 matters? Come on. You know, they're 13-0. They're changing coaches. They lose a lot of talent over there. Look how the committee treated UCF. They were undefeated late in the year, and they were a spot behind the three-loss Mississippi State. Yeah. I don't think that was right. I never would have done it. I thought they were legit. But I think they take a step back this year.
Yeah. Let me ask you about Lane Kiffin. Been some articles. Lane did something with ESPN saying, hey, you know what? My ego, I don't need it. I'm very comfortable here. I'm just not buying it. I think Lane just wants to get to the right job where he's got a chance to turn something around. But do you buy – could you see him being here another 3 or 4 years in Boca?
If he doesn't win, that'll be the case. But no. I do think he'll win.
I do, too.
And that'll be – I spent a week in Phoenix at this the summit where there were six coaches there. Six conferences there. And that was a topic of conversation. Will Lane be back in the Power Five? And I said, absolutely. I mean, I think there'll be somebody out there who will hire him. I don't think it's that much of a stretch. He's laid low lately. Even that ESPN piece, he wasn't outrageous. You know, I guess he's just a tweet away from doing something. I don't know. But, I think he's a good coach. I've always thought he's a good coach. And even Nick Saban, any of his biggest critics that says he's a good coach, he just has to, you know, keep his eyes on the prize. I do think he'll be back in a Power Five, because he's already in his first year, he's taken FAU to places they've never been.
Yeah. I think he's going to have another good team,
too. Yeah, probably.
Loading it up.
Yeah. How about two other coaches that are friends here on the program and obviously in the state as well? Oregon's got Mario Cristobal and Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher. You have them both near 25 at 21-23. What do you think of those two teams?
Yeah, I had a long, long conversation with Mario in Phoenix and spent signing day with Jimbo this year. I think Mario, after talking to Mario, I think he can get Oregon back. I thought that was a little bit of a curious hire, but they went right down the road with a recruiting class that he had really helped assemble. And I don't know if you saw lately, he landed a quarterback the other day. But he's all in at Oregon. This guy is going to be really, really good. And obviously he's been a head coach before. So I think they're in great shape. I think he's going to restore Oregon. Jimbo, it's going to be a little tougher just because it's the SEC West. And they walk into that division, I don't know, again, fourth in the division this year on paper going in. And those people, those Texas A&M people have absolutely no patience. They expect a championship. I don't know, maybe this year. You saw what the Chancellor did, gave him that trophy with everything but the year penciled in for a national championship. But Jimbo's a good coach. You know, why did he go? Yeah, the money, all-time record money was big. But there are more resources at A&M. It's just it's a mysterious question in college football why they haven't been able to unlock that for the last 20 years since winning the last conference championship.
I just took my daughter up there. Boy, Jimbo, you talk about leaving on bad terms, though, for all the good things he did. Boy, that ended up kind of ugly with FSU. Were you surprised by that, Dennis?
I sort of was. I mean, you hear rumblings out there that, I forget what it's called, the Seminole Foundation, I think, you know, that's in charge or gets the scholarships there. They pay for the scholarships and basically pay for the external there in football. I was told they gave Jimbo, you know, Jimbo wanted stuff facilities, resources, but they gave him the wrong stuff. And I'll leave it at that because I don't know the details. It seems to me their facilities are pretty good.
Yeah.
When you look at Doak Campbell and the indoor and everything else. But I think it's a simple case of, you know, you fall out of love after a while. You stay anywhere, whatever it was, 9, 10 years, it just gets to be old. We see it in coaching circles all the time, so maybe that's the case.
Yeah.
Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports. We're talking about his article, the College Football Top 25 Rankings Post-Spring Football.
That was a good teaser, by
the way. Yeah, no, it was very good.
Nice teaser for us.
Yeah, we like that kind of stuff, Dennis. We do. Thank you so much for your time. We'll bother you again soon.
All right, Joe. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks so much to Joe Rose, Zach Krantz, and Dennis Dodd. Thank you for joining us here on Hurricanes Weekly. We'll be back next week with another show next Sunday. This week we'll be in Durham, North Carolina for the ACC Baseball Tournament. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a great day, everyone.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.